This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, May 17th, 2019. I'm Mark Belanger. In the report this week, how Labour in New Zealand is fighting climate change. Huge corporations are using artificial intelligence to take over public education. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
You new grandpa, you new grandpa, so tell me what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
This is Radio Labour. Around the world, the labor movement is confronting the effects of climate change and calling for a just transition for workers to sustainable jobs. In New Zealand, for example, unionists attended a recent conference on a just transition to discuss how the country should react to climate change. The conference was held in Taranaki, a region in the west of the country. One of the unionists at the conference was Sam Huggard, the secretary of the New Zealand Council of Trade Unions. I asked Mr. Huggard to describe who attended the conference in Taranaki and what took place.
We had a really exciting Just Transition Summit in Taranaki. It was prompted by some work unions have been doing for the last couple of years. So unions and workers were there in numbers. Employers obviously were there, government, training providers. And a key feature for us here in New Zealand is Indigenous people, iwi and hapu from the region, making sure that there's a strong Indigenous focus on the work we're doing on climate change. So it was really just the start of a process for us, but it was a pretty good start.
What were some of the messages the unionists at the conference passed on to the other delegates?
The key point that workers and their unions were making at the summit was that for workers, there's two parts really to a just transition. It's not just about economic diversification, which we absolutely support, but there's got to be a transition and a pathway for workers into new jobs. Creating good jobs alone isn't enough. We were really pushing what, I guess, in policy speak, you might call active labour market policies, making sure that there's a dedicated plan in place to support workers through change with retraining, retooling up, particularly while you're still currently employed before you go to the new job, financial income assistance and smoothing, relocation assistance, a really strong package to support workers through change to move into these new jobs.
What was the reaction of the government and employer participants to the union arguments about climate change?
Well, the reaction from government and employers was they were there and they were listening. We haven't yet, I think, convinced everyone that it's absolutely essential to have that really strong active labour market underpinnings, in part because New Zealand has done a very poor job of this for nearly two or three decades. As an OECD report found a couple of years ago, New Zealand is among the worst in OECD for penalising workers when they're going through economic restructuring and change. Workers bear the brunt economically of that. So we're having to relearn how to do that, but the commitment is there, which is important. And so really it's going to be up to us to keep pushing that and to be specific in our requests and demands about what it looks like so it doesn't just get kind of lost in the process.
Who in New Zealand will be needing just transition provisions as climate change is confronted?
New Zealand's relatively lucky in a sense in that 85% of our electricity already comes from renewable sources, particularly hydro. We have a number of very fast-flowing lakes in our South Island and to a lesser extent wind as well. So for us, it's mostly the oil and gas workers and coal workers. They're relatively small in number, but they're a significant group of employment in key industry, key regions for us, including Taranaki, where our summit was held, and including on our west coast of our South Island. So oil and gas is first on our list at the moment for a just transition. And in part, that was brought about by a decision government made last year, which was an important one, to give a long-term signal that they'd be ending future permits for offshore oil and gas exploration. Current permits will run, but there'll be no more future permits. And so we're now starting the plan to phase out of fossil fuels and to heavily invest in renewables to finish closing the loop up to 100% renewables.
So now you've had a large and successful conference on climate change. What's next?
The next steps for us to feed into a roadmap, which was launched at the Just Transition Summit in Taranaki, led by the local unions and iwi and business and employers and so on. The next steps for us is to really feed into that to make sure it's got the detail it needs, and then really to build public support for the funding for the transition. It's an area that was, in a way, not properly addressed at the summit, that the funding for a just transition has to come from employers as well as government.
The Global Union for Teachers, Education International, is warning that the use of artificial intelligence in schools may lead to loss of privacy for students and minimizing the role of teachers. EI represents more than 30 million teachers and other education workers in 172 countries. It recently released a report outlining concerns that huge education companies will collect massive amounts of data on students and replace teachers with computer programs. I talked to one of the authors of the report about EI's concerns. Anna Hogan is a lecturer at the University of Queensland in Australia. I asked her about the activities of Pearson, one of the education corporations using artificial intelligence in education.
Pearson is one of the world's largest education companies, and it's moved from being this textbook supplier to become this really mainstream provider of all sorts of education products and services. So things like curriculum materials, assessment, online learning programs, teacher professional development, and the list goes on. And what Pearson's doing, or their strategy, is really moving into that development of the digital learning aspects of their business. And how they're doing that is working towards personalized learning programs that start to integrate artificial intelligence. So personalized learning is where students sit at their computer and they learn through an algorithm which dictates what they need to learn. So you can think of it a little bit like a Siri or Alexa becoming your new school teacher. And the way that companies like Pearson develop these programs, it requires a huge amount of data. They need to understand how students learn to be able to program an algorithm that can essentially teach students what they need to know and in a way that's best for that particular individual. So to get to your question about why we're concerned about this type of data privatization, and there's quite a few issues here. So the first one's around privacy. So in terms of how student data is collected and what types of data are collected. And then this links to the issues of consent. So often users don't have a knowledge or understanding that their data is being collected or in the way that it is used. So for example, Pearson will collect data from users interacting with its products and services in responses to their exercises, assignments, coursework, instructor comments, the activities they've completed. While these are all de-identified and aggregated to analyze how Pearson services are used, and then going into their education research and supporting the strategic development of its products and services. But in the report, we basically suggest that then this leads to issues of transparency, as consent is not always explicitly sought. And then there's also issues around data ownership and data responsibility, as Pearson suggests they're only stewards of student data, and it's actually owned by its institutional customers, which then leads to this idea that, I suppose, around data openness, because if schools own the data or students own the data and Pearson owns the products that are being produced and sold from the data, and essentially the knowledge is being locked up in corporate silos, meaning that the benefit for learners and society more broadly is not realised. So this is what we call the privatisation of the data and the data infrastructure. So if Pearson was to open up and share their knowledge of their algorithms and what they're learning from this data, then potentially the social benefits for all of society in terms of student knowledge and understanding would be greatly enhanced. And I suppose the last thing to sort of raise in terms of the concern is about the ethics of these programs themselves. So we know that personalized learning uses algorithms to predict customers' capabilities. And these predictions basically allow students to go to next types, or it basically grants or withholds their access to different types of learning opportunities. So in a way, students are being taught through these predicted actions, and it's not really allowing them the opportunity to surprise us as they often do in our traditional classrooms.
The report prepared by Ms. Hogan and Sam Sellar is called Pearson 2025, Transforming Teaching and Privatizing Education Data. You can find more about the report on Education International's website at www.ei-ie.org. Here with his report about union events around the world is Labour Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
Here's a tiny sample of the hundreds of union news stories in 31 languages added to our site each day last week. Our top stories section included links to coverage of the concerted anti-union campaign by a U.S.-based airline, more attacks on Turkish journalists, and the global protest by Uber drivers as the company went public this week. We had news of strikes and lockouts in dozens of countries. Here are just a few highlights. Jute mill workers in Bangladesh were off the job in a protest over wage theft. University workers in India started the second week of their walkout over wages on Thursday. A wage and safety strike by hotel room attendants in France passed the 35-day mark this week. Rail workers in Mali completed the fifth month of their strike over wages and wage theft. And an associated hunger strike by the union's leadership ended on medical advice this week. Public sector workers in Guinea-Bissau held the second in a series of two-day walkouts to back their union's demand for a wage increase. More than half of Côte d'Ivoire's school system was completely shut down as teachers there escalated their wage dispute with a day-long walkout. A wage strike continued this week at an airport in Chile. Indian municipal workers took a half-day off work to attend a rally demanding the wages owed to them. And Greek hospital workers struck against the lingering effects of a decade of austerity policies on Thursday. Our top working women's stories included coverage of union preparations for next month's women's strike in Switzerland, a renewed campaign by Spanish unions to force employers and the government to re-examine workplace safety and health through a gender lens, and the challenges faced by Indonesian domestic workers as they begin to organize. The free health and safety newswire we offer in cooperation with Hazards magazine carried stories to hundreds of union websites around the world about the seven-month-long struggle by workers in Barbados to fix an unhealthy workplace, a safety strike over union representation issues in Canada, and the efforts being made by United Kingdom airline unions to address mental health issues in the workplace. Currently, LaborStart is running two online actions. Take just a few seconds out of your day and join thousands of trade unionists around the world in helping workers make their lives better, or even help save those lives. This is Derek Blackadder from LaborStart, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here from their loft in 2020 is Australia's Victorian Trade Union Choir with You Knew, Grandpa, You Knew.
You knew our world would be in trouble as your emissions grew and grew. You said it's only froth and bubble, but did you really have a clue? You knew, Grandpa, you knew, Grandpa. So tell me, what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You knew, Grandma, you knew,
Grandma.
So tell me, what did you do? Now hear a song from 2030. We hope it's getting through to you. Why did your palace stay so dirty? How come you didn't just renew? You knew, Grandpa, you knew,
Grandpa.
So tell me, what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You knew, Grandma, you knew,
Grandma.
So tell me, what did you do? You knew the temperature was rising. You hoped that it might stop at
two.
It's more, and so it's not surprising that we can put the blame on you. You knew, Grandpa, you knew,
Grandpa.
So tell me, what did you do?
Tell me what you do.
You knew, Grandma, you knew,
Grandma.
So tell me, what did you do? You had a lovely life to suit ya, and never wanted to say whoa.
And that's it. International labor news you can use. I'm Marc Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.